Immigration. It's one of the founding principles of our country. It was a deeply divisive topic in this year's presidential election, and it promises to be a major issue going forward. Mexicans at the southern border and Syrian refugees fleeing war get a lot of media attention. But in Louisville, the fastest growing group is not from Mexico or Syria. They're from an island in the Caribbean. The number of Cubans in our community is surging. In 2015, a full 30% of all refugees arriving in Kentucky were from Cuba. And the vast majority of those, nearly 1,000 people, came to Louisville, according to statistics from the Kentucky Office for Refugees. I'm Tara Anderson. In this program, my reporting partner Luis De Leon and I talk with local Cubans, with some of the people who help ease the way for them, and we'll explore why Louisville is becoming a more attractive place for people from the island. This is The Next Louisville, a project from 89.3 WFPL and the Community Foundation of Louisville, exploring race, ethnicity, and culture in our city. I'm Tara Anderson. The number of Cubans in Louisville comes as a bit of a surprise to some people, especially if you aren't connected to the Latino community in town. We don't have our own version of Little Havana, unless you count one of the Havana Rumba locations. We don't have a lot of Cubans in local political or business leadership like you might see in South Florida. The Cuban community here is younger, more recently arrived from the island, and they fly a little more under the radar. But they're here, and they're building their lives. So to get started, we've got to do a little history review. Depending on how old you are, you might think of Cuba as a dreamy tropical playground for rich Americans, as an outpost of the evil empire just off the coast of Florida, or as a super hip, slightly daring vacation spot. It's been all of those and more. This island nation of just more than 11 million people has had more than its share of turmoil, but the most recent chapter began in 1959, with the overthrow of President Fulgencio Batista, the rise of Fidel Castro, and the beginning of the United States embargo against the country. You're listening to a sample of Cuban revolutionary music, singing about the triumph of the proletariat. It sounds a lot like Soviet music of the times, because this kind of propaganda was directly inspired by the Soviet Union, which also sent money, oil, medicine, and industrial supplies in exchange for the island's sugar and citrus, not to mention rum and cigars. By 1985, 70% of Cuba's trade was with the Soviet Union. So when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1989, Cuba really felt it. But in the way of communist regimes, they gave the crisis a vaguely optimistic name.
In Cuba, we were going through something that it was called the special period.
That's Fernando Martinez, who first attempted to leave Cuba during this time. He's now a successful chef in Louisville and co-owner of a group of restaurants, including Red Barn Kitchen, a barbecue place where I interviewed him before the lunch rush. But as a teenager in Havana, he was selling home-cooked food to taxi drivers and thinking about how to get out.
That's when Rothschild started going back to capitalism, and they went through something that they called the perestroika. They were privatizing everything, and they quit sending the help to Cuba. So the economic situation in Cuba was horrible. So people started building rafts and, you know, trying to leave the country, you know, however they could do it.
Martinez is one of those people who built a raft, but he didn't make it all the way to the United States on his first attempt. He was picked up by a ship and taken back to the U.S. base at Guantanamo Bay, where he spent a year in a refugee camp before being allowed to come to the States. If Martinez had made it to U.S. soil, he would have been allowed to stay, because Cubans have special status among immigrants.
There is a law here in the United States that it is a Cuban Adjustment Act, enacted in 1966 by the Congress.
Luis Fuentes is the publisher of El Quentubano, a monthly magazine for the Latino community in Kentucky. He came to the U.S. from Cuba in 2000 and lives in Frankfort, where his day job is working in air quality control for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. He wears a pin on the lapel of his blue sport coat with images of the Cuban and American flags. We spoke with him outside a Heine Brothers coffee shop when he was visiting Louisville for the day.
This law allows the Cuban to stay in the United States once they get in land. And 1 year later, they can become permanent residents.
So unlike immigrants from other countries around the world, Cubans don't have to stand in line, so to speak. If they can get here, they can stay, and they can start working right away. This special privilege was the United States' way to stick a finger in the eye of the Castro regime, and by extension, its Soviet support. But things are changing.
Now to that other big headline this morning, President Obama making history, becoming the first U.S. president in nearly 90 years to step foot on Cuban soil. He'll meet with Raul.
The relationship between the two nations is warming. President Obama has supported relaxing trade policies with Cuba. Restrictions on imports have been lifted, and the U.S. Embassy in Havana has reopened, even though the embargo is still officially in effect. Even a few business and real estate folks from Louisville have been eyeing possible trade with Cuba, looking for a new market that will be opening soon. Travel is getting easier, too. While I was working on this story, I got a marketing email from Delta Airlines telling me about direct flights from Atlanta to Havana starting next month. And now, because the U.S. isn't quite seeing Cuba as an enemy, many Cubans are afraid that the Cuban Adjustment Act of 1966 will go away, and so will their special status. Some Cuban-American politicians, including Florida Senator Marco Rubio, have made the case for doing away with the law, saying that the privilege is being abused. We did all of our interviews before the recent presidential election, but most of the people we talked to didn't seem to think that it mattered who was president. They think the law is going away, no matter what. For now, it's still in place, but Cuban immigration is increasing, with people trying to get in before something changes. John Kollinger is the executive director of Kentucky Refugee Ministries, which helps new arrivals get settled in Louisville. He says his agency will be providing services to about 850 Cubans this fiscal year.
It's been quite a dramatic increase this past year. Actually, the past 2 years, there have been well-documented dramatic increases in Cuban migration to the U.S. through various routes. A lot of people going to Ecuador, other routes, and traveling through different Central American countries, and then through Mexico, entering at the Mexican border. Of course, we have a lot of people who make it to Florida and who register with our Miami office, and some joining family members who are citizens or have been here for a long time. But we do have many hundreds who enter at Texas border and have friends or just take a bus to Louisville because they've heard about the community here, or they know somebody who lives here.
So while the official refugee agencies report nearly 1,000 Cubans coming to Louisville last year, the number is most likely higher because of Cubans coming from other cities in the U.S. who aren't tracked. When refugees come to the U.S., they usually spend a couple of days in an entry city, like Miami or New York, and then they're sent on to another city where they'll get services like help with housing, job training, and English classes. But they don't have to stay there, and sometimes the word will get around a community that a certain city has better opportunities for immigrants. That's what seems to be happening with Louisville and Cubans right now, according to Brian Warren with Louisville Metro's Office for Globalization.
Cubans are interesting because they are such a fast-growing population that they are getting to that tipping point where they are beginning to attract secondary migrants, friends and family and colleagues from other parts of the country who want to look at an opportunity for a great start somewhere else. You know, it may be too expensive in Miami to live. There may not be the job opportunity that they want. They may be looking for a place to live that is a little bit smaller, that's a little bit more family-oriented, that provides those kind of opportunities. And I think that's what's happening with the Cuban population.
That's what happened with Fernando Martinez. When he was getting ready to leave the camp at Guantanamo, he was given the choice of two cities, Louisville and San Diego. He'd never heard of Louisville, but he had heard of California, so he went there.
A bunch of my friends that we met in Guantanamo, they came to Louisville. And, you know, we would talk on the phone and they would tell me how well they were doing in Louisville. You know, low rent, good standards of living, great pay for immigrants, you know, doing, you know, being butchers. And, you know, I was living in San Diego. San Diego is an extremely expensive city for an immigrant that just came to the country that doesn't speak English. So, you know, I told them, you know, I'm going to visit for a weekend. And I came to Louisville, and I never went back to San Diego.
Martinez spent about a year and a half working in a meat processing facility, cutting beef. He later took a job as a dishwasher at a hotel, and he cooked at a country club, working multiple jobs for years, while he, his mother, and his wife worked toward their big dream, opening their own Cuban restaurant.
I worked probably three jobs. There was a time that my mom, my wife, and I, we had one cart, and we were working, my wife and my mom, two jobs, and I had three jobs, just saving money. It took us 7 years to save the money that we needed to open a Havana Rumba.
That was in 2002. Martinez says he and his wife, who is from Venezuela and also works in the restaurant industry, considered moving to Miami at one point, but decided that Louisville was a better place for both family and business.
She became pregnant with, you know, our first son, and we were like, you know what? This is a great city to have a family. Miami's better when we were single, and that's why we wanted to move over there. But, you know, then we were going to have a family, and we both had the same idea of opening a restaurant. So we came to the realization, you know, we're going to have more competition in Miami. It's going to be hotter now that we're going to have, you know, a family. So let's stay in Louisville, and we're glad we did because we love it here.
Martinez eventually sold Havana Rumba, which now has three locations in Louisville. His current company, the Ole Restaurant Group, now has a portfolio that includes not only Red Barn Kitchen, but a tapas restaurant, an Italian place, two burger restaurants, and a taco joint.
Hi.
Hi.
We're here to see Dr. Polo.
Okay.
Martinez told me I should talk to Dr. Juan Polo, an internist whose cramped office downtown sees a range of immigrant patients, many of them Spanish-speaking. He welcomed my reporting partner Luis and me around noon one day as his staff took lunch in the break room next door. Polo was among the first Cubans to settle in Louisville, arriving with his family in 1994 under the auspices of Church World Service, one of the agencies hired by the State Department to help refugees. Louisville-based Kentucky Refugee Ministries works with Church World Service, which sent Polo, his wife, and two children to this city he had never heard of before.
The only information we had was that we were going to come to USA and we were going to be placed somewhere to study and to work. But I didn't know anything about Louisville, Kentucky before I came, no.
Polo says it was challenging to get started here at that time because there was not much of a Cuban community and because he didn't have the proper licensing to continue his medical career.
Kentucky Refugee Ministry had not experience in the settle down of medical doctors, so I didn't know how to begin. Also, my two children, they were 15 and 18, they didn't know English to communicate, neither knew my wife. So basically, I was the only one prepared to begin working.
Polo had spent 18 years as a gynecological surgeon in Cuba, but he couldn't just get a job as a doctor in the U.S. He started working as a medical assistant at a nursing home, then got a job as a lab technician while he took the required exams to obtain his medical license. He was 40 years old when he started his residency in internal medicine at the University of Louisville. Now he and two nurse practitioners see patients from all over the world, including many from Cuba. We ask Polo about the common complaints of his Cuban patients.
Many people that are professionals or technicians, they are not used to be in a line in a factory. So most of the problem they have is musculoskeletal pain. So I see many people with back pain, with neck pain, hand problems.
And that kind of work, combined with the stress of learning a new culture, also has other effects.
And also some others related to the anxiety, situational anxiety, while they get used to the country, they get used to the language. The language barrier is a big, big problem for them to find better jobs and better positions, and they stay in those factories for a long, long time.
Learning English is a huge challenge for most immigrants. But because English is so widely spoken, many people have the benefit of at least a little study in their home country before they get here. But Polo says lots of Cubans don't have any English knowledge when they arrive here. And the reason is political.
Because for years, English was a taboo, was something that was not taught, frankly, well in Cuba because of the disagreements with USA. So it was probably well seen to study Russian or other things, other disciplines. English was seen always like something not very accepted by many people and by the government. And that was something that we inherited. So now people have discovered in the country that they have to know the language to be able to go outside Cuba.
Although he spoke English well when he arrived in Louisville, Polo says having an accent can be a professional hindrance. Sometimes when people ask him where he's from, he'll tell them Hazard, Kentucky, just to be silly. But I think he's also trying to make a point. Nevertheless, he thinks the situation for immigrant workers has improved recently.
The way the managers accept now workers or people applying for a position, if that person has an accent, has also changed in the last years. Was not that way before. Managers didn't want to hire anybody or try not to hire anybody with a different accent, assuming that might not be a good worker or might not be a person to communicate easily. And that situation has also changed.
One of the main ways that agencies like Kentucky Refugee Ministries help newcomers is with finding a job. Cubans arriving in the U.S. tend to be more well-educated, on average, than many other immigrants, bringing with them professional degrees and experience that are nearly useless without good language skills. John Kohlinger at KRM says his agency has helped Cubans find jobs in logistics and distribution, food processing, and manufacturing. NHK, a Japanese-based auto parts supplier, has hired 38 Cubans to work in their Louisville plant in just the last couple of months. According to Kohlinger, employers are eager to hire Cubans.
Cubans are very hardworking, you know, really appreciate the opportunity to make some money. They haven't had real opportunities in Cuba, and so employers just give us tremendously positive feedback about their Cuban workers.
Kohlinger also says Cubans in the U.S. generally have a strong drive toward home ownership. Cuban President Raul Castro legalized the buying and selling of private property in 2011, but prices are sky high. Many expats are driving up property values, even though they're technically not allowed to buy themselves and have to go through a Cuban citizen. So when Cubans arrive here in the U.S., buying a home is often on the top of their list. But that doesn't necessarily mean they'll all be in the same part of town.
It's been a real success story. I mean, sort of underappreciated. I mean, Cubans coming here, finding employment, doing well at their jobs. A lot of Cuban home ownership. Hundreds of Cubans who've bought their own homes, you know, living in sort of middle-class neighborhoods throughout Jefferson County. So there's no Calle Ocho, there's no Little Havana where you see a concentration of low-income Cubans. It's mostly going to work, you know, buying a home, kids going to school.
Fernando Martinez remembers buying his first house 15 or 16 years ago. It was located around the corner from a McDonald's, and he and his wife decided to celebrate with Big Macs.
We didn't even close on the house yet. And I told my wife, you know what? Let's get some food and have lunch at our house. The people that owned the house that weren't living in the house. So what we did is that we just sat in the back yard in the patio and we had our first lunch, but that's how excited we were about owning our house. So that's why we sneak in, in the house. It wasn't even ours, and we had McDonald's.
In the backyard.
My wife, she was like, we're going to get in trouble. No, don't worry. This is going to be our house. But we haven't even closed. Hey, it's going to happen. Trust me.
Economic opportunity is a huge reason for Cuban immigration to the U.S., but personal freedom from a repressive regime is also important. This is a point that several people we spoke with emphasized, and we saw how it plays out firsthand when we tried to find Cubans to talk with. More on that after the break. You're listening to The Next Louisville from 89.3 WFPL News and Louisville Public Media. Thank you.
Sí, pero qué linda es mi Cuba, qué hermosa es mi Cuba.
You're listening to The Next Louisville from 89.3 WFPL News Louisville. I'm Tara Anderson. My reporting partner, Luis De Leon, and I thought that we would just go out to some of Louisville's Cuban businesses and talk to people, ask them about what their life in Louisville is like. But it wasn't that easy. You're hearing our third attempt to talk to someone at a jewelry store in Iroquois. We were curious about what kinds of items their customers were buying. Along the walls of the store, behind the jewelry cases, there were shelves of small appliances like toasters and rice cookers. There was also a section of toiletries and over-the-counter medications. Very few of them were brands that I recognize, but Luis, who's from Mexico, knew most of them. The first time we visited the jewelry store, they asked us to leave a list of questions and return in a week. When we came back a week later, the person we had spoken with was eating lunch and asked us to come back in an hour. After an hour, we were told that she had unexpectedly left for an appointment.
Okay.
We got the message. And this was fairly typical of our experience. In several stores we visited, the people we spoke to claimed that the owners weren't there but took our number and promised to call. They didn't. We tried another store that sold clothes and shoes with a big Cuban flag in the window, but the shopkeeper was on the phone when we got there and completely ignored us. We were totally unable to get her attention. A grocery store owner down the street on Beachmont was polite but told us he was allergic to media. When we sat down with Luis Fuentes of El Quintubano magazine, he told us that it wasn't exactly our fault.
I have felt the same, because in Cuba, 50 years under a communist system, it really goes to your roots. It really, you know, stays in your body. In Cuba, you don't have the freedom to talk, even in your home. Everybody is living with a police inside. Everybody is afraid to say the truth or to say what they are thinking, because they are afraid that the government, which is everywhere, because the government owns everything, will, you know, take advantage of you.
Fuentes has a somewhat privileged position now that he's a U.S. citizen, but he still has family in Cuba who could suffer if he decides to speak out.
I'm giving all this declaration because I really feel that I am in a free country, but I am taking a risk because my parents are there. Even as a U.S. citizen, I'm afraid that my parents could be, you know, they are retired, but if they would be working, I would think twice my answers to you, because it could affect them.
More than one person told us there are Cuban agents, police, in the U.S. right now looking for information. We can't prove that, but some people believe it. Fernando Martinez says he thinks it's possible.
You know, I was going to say something bad about the Cuban government, and I would lower my voice, and, you know, I realized, you know, I'm already in the state, so yeah. why am I still afraid? And, you know, you see people that they've been here for a year, 2 years, and they still do it. It takes time to get it out of your system. They put so much fear into you, and, you know, it make the government sound omnipresent and omnipotent. So, I mean, you're afraid just to comment about anything, you know, against the government. So that's probably why people don't want to talk to you.
Yeah. That's insane. So do you think there are Cuban police or Cuban agents here?
You know, that's maybe not in Louisville, but, you know, places like Miami where you have a bigger concentration of, you know, and who knows, maybe even here. I don't doubt it.
At the Cuban-owned jewelry store we visited, there was a rack of business cards with names and phone numbers for all sorts of professionals. Plumbers, movers, electricians, attorneys, hairdressers, even a clown for children's parties. Some, but not all, of the cards had Cuban flags printed on them. Luis called them all, reaching out in Spanish. None of them wanted to speak on the record, but it speaks to the depth of the Cuban community in Louisville. We did find one Cuban business owner who invited us in, and our conversation came with some tiny cups of super strong Cuban coffee and some delicious pastries. Mi Sueño is a Cuban grocery store on Bardstown Road, just outside the Waterson, across the street from the new Costco.
on a cool, sunny fall morning, the door was open, and a hint of a breeze swept over the coffee bar just inside the door. Three women, most likely Cuban, stood around the bar, drinking coffee and chatting. Mirlene Lopez owns Mi Sueño with her husband, Yolan. We asked her about their best-selling items. She preferred to speak in Spanish, so we asked an actor to read her words in English.
Pues, la malta, los jugos naturales.
Well, malta for one, fruit juices. We sell a lot of those. The bakery does well, too. I don't know. There are a lot of things. The yogurt that Cubans like.
The bakery offers everything from big flat loaves of Cuban bread and cakes for birthdays and special occasions to some of the best breakfast pastries in town. Don't ask me how I know.
El que más le gusta a los cubanos es el pastel de guayaba.
Cuban's favorite is a guava pastry. Also coconut, guava and cheese, meat. These are the ones that sell the most.
We asked Mirlene to name her favorite item in the pastry case.
Me gusta mucho un dulce que se llama bobo. Sí, ese es bien rico.
I really like a pastry called bobo. It's really delicious. It's from my province of Camagüey. It's made with a buttercream, kind of like toast with butter. It's my favorite. But all the pastries are delicious.
Todos los dulces son bien ricos.
Mirlene's husband, Yolan, was always the driving force behind the business. He came to the U.S. in 2006 with the goal of one day opening a store. Mirlene and their daughter joined him in 2008, and in 2009, they opened Mi Sueño, which at that time was just a grocery. Now, in addition to the bakery and the coffee bar, they've added a meat department. They opened a restaurant down the street a few years ago, also called Mi Sueño, but they sold it because they didn't have enough time for both. Mirlene says she was never planning to leave Cuba, but it happened.
Nunca me pasó por la mente dejar mi país, jamás.
It never crossed my mind to leave my country, never. But since Yolan had a business, well, there you never know. Today you have everything and maybe tomorrow you have nothing. And because of the fear of losing everything we had, he decided to come here. And I followed him with our daughter.
We asked her, how is it possible to lose everything in Cuba?
Las leyes allá no sé, es como que no dejan a las personas salir adelante.
The law there, I just don't know. They don't let people move ahead. Here, if you're an honest worker, you can have anything you want. And there, really, it's not possible.
A row of devotional candles near the cash register caught our attention. We asked Mirlene which saints were the most popular.
Which ones do we sell the most? Well, it would be St. Lazarus, the Virgin of Charity, and St. Barbara. Those are the saints which are most well known in Cuba.
St. Lazarus is one of the most popular saints in Cuba. He's associated with healing and figures in the Aruba religion too, with the name Babalu Aye. Mirlene says she's not religious, but her husband Yolan has always had a figure of St. Lazarus somewhere in their home. Most of Mirlene's customers are Cuban, but she says they also have people from Mexico, Colombia, Ecuador, and other Latin American countries. They have a wire transfer service for sending cash to Mexico, but not to Cuba. Another business in the same building had that wire transfer to Cuba first, and they didn't want to compete. The coffee is resolutely Cuban, but Mirlene says non-Cubans can learn to like it.
Tenemos un carnicero que es mexicano y ya se lo toma perfecto.
One of our butchers is Mexican, and he drinks it perfectly. He drinks the coffee just fine. He has gotten accustomed to it.
Kentucky Refugee Ministries is headquartered in a busy, crowded building in the Highlands. Recent arrivals from around the world are here to see their case managers, take English classes, and get help filling out paperwork. Although everybody is mixed up together, people tend to stick with their cohorts. The Burundians are over here, the Burmese are over there, and so on. But the largest group by far is the Cubans. This is a cultural orientation class specifically for Cuban clients of KRM.
Each week, a Spanish-speaking instructor covers a different topic, ranging from how to write a resume and how to rent an apartment to how to find health insurance and how to file a complaint about sexual harassment. It's not just that Cubans have to learn how to speak English. They're coming from a completely different way of life, one where the government controls every facet of your day.
When you come here from Cuba, it's like, you were born again.
Pavel Reyes came to the U.S. from Cuba in 2012 with his wife, Yaima LeBlanc Nunez. They both work at Kentucky Refugee Ministries now, but they were clients when they arrived. Reyes says the financial transition can be hard.
Because you just don't know how to rent an apartment, how to pay the rent. What's credit? What's that? I don't know. A lot of stuff that you just never knew existed, and it makes it harder for you to adjust. You come from Cuba, you got some of misinformation about how things work here in the States, and then you come here, you are not able to find a place to live because you have no history. You have no credit, no social security number. Bills start piling up for whatever reason. If you just try to forget about it, it's gonna bite you later, so you have to adjust and keep going, right? That's something that's difficult for most people.
We gathered in a conference room with four Cuban staff members, Reyes and Nunez, along with Dalai Mendez and Carmen Arias Perez, all of whom used to be KRM clients. All of them speak English well, but the conversation shifted back and forth between English and Spanish, so we're using actors to overdub in English where needed. Luis and I asked why there's no official Cuban community group in Louisville or any visible Cuban community leaders. Perez had an answer.
A nosotros nos obligaron a la colectividad en Cuba.
We were obligated to group activity in Cuba, so it's something that we reject because we lived it as an obligation. Now everyone wants to live their own life. Really, we could do more as a community, but I don't want anybody to tell me anything. After being at work all day with my manager telling me what to do, I spent my whole life with Fidel telling me what to do. I spent my life with someone else telling me what I have to do.
I was told by several other people that during the annual World Fest Parade of Nations on the Belvedere, there are usually only a handful of Cubans marching behind their flag, while other countries have much bigger groups. It seems that Cubans, especially in this area, just aren't joiners. Reyes jumped in.
There is no organization of Cuban immigrants here, and I don't think we will have one for a long time. Because from my point of view, an organization like that needs permanency. And many people don't have that in mind. Lots of Cubans come and then they leave. And it's not just because they want to go to Florida. Many of them are used to a more urban life. And that's not possible here. Here you have to get in the car because you can't walk anywhere.
And this is an important point about Cubans living in Louisville. Our car-focused lifestyle, our lack of an active street life, and our cold, gray winters are all hard to get used to. Most of the Cubans we spoke to knew people who hung around Louisville for a little while, then decided they'd rather be in South Florida for a variety of reasons. Here's Dalai Mendez.
Sometimes I think it's not only the cold, it's what we don't do because of the cold. I think that the city is not as lively as New York or Chicago. Here, everyone stays in their house when it gets cold, and this is shocking to Cubans. People like to walk, I don't know, live a more social life. After 3 or 4 years, the majority of my friends leave to Florida. And so in the end, many of us prefer to either move to Florida or live in a warmer place.
In Cuba, you have to apply for official permission to move from one part of the country to another. But a Cuban in the U.S. who's unhappy where they are can move fairly quickly. Carmen Arias says it's also about the kind of life that people want.
We have many Cubans who come to Louisville, and after a while, they decide either they won't live any more winter and they go to Florida, or they just are willing to find what Dalai says about the culture and the human contact we can find in Florida. But here, Cuban community is more work-centered, more like willing to have a kind of life stable, safe, and we are, I would say, a hardworking community. I'm not saying that people who go to Miami are not hardworking people, but I think it's just our choice.
All of the KRM staff members said they were glad to be in Louisville, but of course they're a self-selecting group. They weren't particularly interested in discussing U.S. politics, preferring to keep their eyes on their own paper, so to speak. Pavel Reyes.
Yo me siento super bien por muchas
cosas. I feel good about many things in this country, although I never idealize it. I know that there are very bad things. Right now, the current environment is a worrisome thing. But if you are not in an area where you get close to the problems, I think you don't have to worry about the problems. Your life is your life, and no one bothers you.
This opinion was one that I heard echoed by many of the Cubans we met. A lifetime of anxiety around political affairs has left many of them, especially of the younger generation, less inclined to get involved politically and instead focus on money, home, and family, and in some cases, artistic expression. We'll hear more about that after the break. You're listening to The Next Louisville from 89.3 WFPL News and Louisville Public Media. You're listening to The Next Louisville from 89.3 WFPL News and Louisville Public Media. I'm Tara Anderson. One of Cuba's biggest exports has been its music. From Celia Cruz and Benny More to contemporary artists like Los Aldeanos and Gente de Zona, Cuban music of all varieties has fans around the world. And some of those musicians have found their way to Louisville, seeking more autonomy, more collaborators, and more possibilities. Rafael Lopez is a pianist and guitarist who plays with various groups around town. He speaks excellent English, but we did the interview in Spanish, so we're using an actor again to read his words in translation.
I work with various bands here too. I play with Cosa Seria as a guitarist in Hermanos. I play with Fuego Azul, with Milenio, and I also work with an Afrobeat group, the Afrophysicists. I'm pretty busy.
He came to the U.S. in 2003 with his parents and his brother when he was 23. He was raised in the city of Holguín in the eastern part of the country. He says Holguín is a creative city with an active arts and culture scene, kind of like Louisville. And he told us that in Holguín, Louisville is well known.
Es bastante interesante porque en la ciudad de Holguín.
It's very interesting, because in the city of Holguín, there is information available with respect to Louisville. Everybody knows about the city of Louisville, Kentucky, and they talk about the system of help for Cuban immigrants, and they say that there is a lot of work, that there are lots of possibilities, that the process of assimilation is much smoother compared to other cities.
Lopez points out that Cubans have an advantage over some other immigrants because they can get their paperwork and start working right away. They don't have to live with the fear and stress of being an undocumented immigrant. But Lopez says that the mindset of the average Cuban born out of years of living under repression can be a disadvantage.
But at the same time, when we come from our country, we bring with us a life or constant struggle. We have a precarious economic situation. Our government is repressive. Basically, from the time you are little, your parents educated you and teach you that you have to have a double life, a double standard, a double morality, at school is this way, at home we talk that way, in the street is this way. At home we can express ourselves. So from the time you're young, you're constantly behaving this way, this daily mutation, you are mutating.
Lopez says Louisville has been good for his creative development. He studied jazz guitar at the University of Louisville and, funny enough, took his first forays into playing salsa music.
Por ejemplo, en Cuba nunca toqué salsa. Nunca, nunca. Yo era rockero.
In Cuba, I never played salsa. Never, never. I was a rock guy. It was rock and roll 100%. I always liked Anglo music, like rhythm and blues, jazz, soul, whatever genre. And it was here in Louisville where I decided to play piano and start with salsa.
In Cuba, Lopez says, there's a much more regimented system for professional musicians. Pay rates for performers are set by agencies, and teachers don't get paid much.
Pero aquí en este caso, hablando de Louisville, es completamente diferente.
But in this case, speaking of Louisville, it's completely different. You can work as an independent contractor. You can set your own terms. And you have a lot of options. You don't have limitations. You can work on different projects. You can work with a group, two groups, three groups. You can teach.
La pureza de esta vida llena de frivolidad.
So, what's ahead for Cuban immigration? Luis Fuentes, publisher of El Cantubano magazine, speaking before the election, said he thought the winning candidate would continue the normalization of the relationship between the two countries, including the possible elimination of the Cuban Adjustment Act. He supports this move, but he wants to make sure it has a positive impact within Cuba as well.
I agree. I support all this flexibilization, all this for getting a better relationship between both countries, because I really like to see, you know, an improvement. And bottom line, my parents in Cuba will get at least, you know, something better from this process. However, what makes me feel bad is that there is not a big change there. The government is stronger. The government is still imposing what they want to do. They still are, you know, punishing and sending to jail people just because they think different.
Fernando Martinez agrees.
You still have the same repression. You still have, you know, the same political issues. You still have abuses and things like that. That, yeah, if the United States is going to give Cuba a different treatment and it's going to treat it as an ally or a friend or however you want to call it, Cuba needs to make some changes too. So, you know, that way the Cuban people, they improve their way of life.
Another reason for the recent uptick in Cuban immigration is a greater exchange of information between the two countries. The Cuban propaganda machine has told Cubans for decades that the United States is a terrible place to live. Luis Fuentes.
When I was a child, when I went to the school, they taught us that the United States was the worst place in the world. Crimes, homeless everywhere. Of course, the communist and the socialist system was the best one. It was the paradise.
Fernando Martinez.
You know, I grew up listening, you know, American people are racist and, you know, they hate Cuba and the Cuban Revolution and, you know, they hate the fact that we're free and, you know, when we weren't really free. So now that, you know, you have people from here and people from there actually talking and people are beginning to realize, well, they were not our enemy. So who is our enemy?
More than one person told us that Cuban newspapers have used recent U.S. news about police shootings and the Black Lives Matter movement to show that the United States is a racist country, just like they did with reports on the civil rights movement in the 1960s. And since at least half of Cuba's population is of African descent, that's no small concern for Cubans coming to the U.S. But Luis Fuentes says because almost every Cuban has a friend or family member in the U.S., they get more direct information about what life is really like here.
They talk with friends, with family, and say, well, do you know what? It is not like as bad as they say. I mean, you have to work, it's a new society, but if you work, if you are an honest person, and if you do good things, you will succeed. So that is, again, you know, a very important source of information that we had not because in Cuba still there is no internet, there is no any access to another publication. Government owns everything, so they are letting you know what they want.
His publication, El Quentubano, is designed to help new arrivals learn about how to be Americans. It's full of ads for realtors, doctors, lawyers, and community activities, all in Spanish. But just the existence of this magazine could be a problem for Fuentes in Cuba.
I know that the government doesn't like this information. I know people that they have gone to Cuba with some copies and they have confiscated these copies in the airport. Because again, there is no information and they want to keep the information under control. So I know that eventually it could be a problem, a potential problem for me and for my family. But you know, this is a risk I have been taking. And I think bottom line that I am doing something good for the community, but you know, you have to be honest with yourself, your family, and with God. You know, I am ready.
Mi voz puede volar, puede atravesar cualquier herida, cualquier tiempo, cualquier soledad, sin que la pueda controlar, toma forma de canción. Así es mi voz, que sale de mi corazón y volará.
Fuentes Magazine is designed to teach its readers Americanness. But what does that really mean? The defining metaphor for the United States has long been the melting pot, but I think we all know that's not accurate. People who come here don't just lose who they are when they arrive, all melted down and swirled around with everybody else in an indistinguishable mass. Sure, they adapt, they learn the language, and they learn how things work, but they keep their own culture too. We've been talking this hour about the things that Cubans carry with them here, their entrepreneurial spirit and hard work, their fear of speaking freely. I think one of the reasons that the Cuban community is so tight and so closed off is that they want to preserve what is essentially theirs, even in this new place. And the ability to decide for oneself, to choose your path and follow it the best way you know, isn't that the most American thing of all?
Cuando me fui buscando el cielo de la libertad, cuántos amigos que dejé y cuántas lágrimas.
You've been listening to The Next Louisville from 89.3 WFPL News. This program was produced as part of a partnership between WFPL and the Community Foundation of Louisville to explore race, ethnicity, and culture in our city. This hour was written, edited, and mixed by me. My reporting partner on this project was Luis de Leon. He also took some terrific photographs that you can see on our website at WFPL.org. Big thanks to Heidi Canovas and Francisco Juarez for lending us their voices. Our editor is Stephen George. You can hear this program again, along with all the other reports in the Next Louisville series, at WFPL.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm Tara Anderson. Thanks for listening.
Con mi rumba cantaré, seré siempre lo que fui, con mi azúcar para ti, yo viviré, yo viviré.